Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Well, Eric Weinstein blocked me. I don't know exactly when, but I'm refreshing relatively regularly on a bunch of thinkers on Twitter. I'm checking their profile. I have their bookmarks. And so it must be within the last week that... Maybe last week, last 2 weeks, I don't know. But it seems that Eric Weinstein has blocked me on Twitter. Here is what I see from my perspective on Twitter. You're blocked. You can't follow Eric Weinstein's tweets. My last tweet tagging him was from 2020. I have not been annoying to Eric Weinstein at all. I have not been sending tweets at him for 3 years now. And he blocks me. To me, this is stunning, but also, you know, when I started my public life, I was annoyed. I was perceiving a disbalance in the whole scientific public speaker sector. There was a disbalance there. I was seeing a sort of people that was all the same. They were all agreeing with each other. I was seeing Richard Dawkins hanging out with Sam Harris and saying Sam Harris is our right-wing member. And I was like, okay, Sam Harris is right-wing. So that is how tight the window is of homogeneity in that sector. And I came out with the revolutionary phenotype with the goal of testing. And I took the political positions that I took to test, will these people engage honestly? Would they engage honestly against someone who thinks differently than them? And clearly the answer is no. These people are on a political project and they are not interested at searching for the truth. One exception being Robert Rivers. That is what's amazing to me. Robert Rivers being still the only one of this gang, I would say, this kind of evolutionary writers, public thinkers, let's call it a loose gang, is the only one who has engaged honestly with me and with my scientific theory. He's the only one who still, as of today, has said, very powerful book, JF, you are totally right, very well treated. Solar Flare says, JF, destroyer of mystic science. Well, it's worrying, but I had to run that test. You know, I had to determine, do we even have an intellectual class in America? We don't. We have people posing as such. We have people posing as renegades. I was quoting Eric Weinstein less than 2 weeks ago, was saying, I'll debate anyone. I was like, oh, that's positive, you know? I don't know exactly what's the timing by which he blocked me, but if I was to make a guess, it's the moment I mentioned on my show that I suspect that Eric Weinstein may be the one behind the idea of the mossy flora pictures of the intellectual dark web. I think I may have hurt him profoundly emotionally at the moment I mentioned this. I think Eric was attached to the mossy flora aesthetics. But I, of course, if you go back in the archives, you'll know that I've been laughing my ass off at these pictures since 2018. That's been 5 years that I'm laughing my ass off at this New York Times piece on the intellectual dark web.
As ridiculous as I find the photography exercise here, especially with the mossy flora, I can't help but want to get a piece of that business. And so I'm going to have to do it. I mean, I did it today. I went to a forest and I took some pictures, guys. Are you ready to view it? Here it comes. First thing you'll need if you want to become a dark web intellectual is a rock with lots of moss, if possible.
I'm a free thinker. We eat plants. This is not mossy flora. This is a potted fern.
Now you'll want to be careful with animals.
Snakes are always a problem.
True free thinking is not easy.
What about the JQ though?
I can do it!
Well, that's it. I've been, after 5 years, I've been officially kicked out of the intellectual dark web. Listen, it sucks because ultimately we have a guy there, Eric Weinstein, who's been for years saying, saying that, presenting himself as an intellectual renegade, I'm willing to explore subjects that will, you know, shrivel some feathers. I'm willing to talk about the JQ on Joe Rogan, and I'm willing to debate anyone. And in the end, why is he blocking me? I haven't added him, so it's not that I'm spamming him with some request that he doesn't want to hear. So ultimately, he's blocking me because I don't fit enough his political project and worldview, and because of this, he can't engage with a very important scientific theory. So sad to see this because ultimately I'm the last real one who can truly take any debate. You know, I should be the one on Joe Rogan saying I'll debate anyone because that would be true. When Eric Weinstein says this, it's not true. Eric Weinstein has a project. He has laid it out. It's in my Twitter replies. People were replying to the thread and they were showing segments. Eric Weinstein sees himself as a chosen shepherd to guide humanity toward its own survival. He thinks that as a Jewish person, he has a special responsibility to drive civilization to its own survival, and that somehow the other races aren't as good as this to do it. He believes that he has been chosen for this mission. That is what he says literally on Joe Rogan. This kind of racial supremacism, I don't feel uncomfortable about it. It's all good. You can think that. But you're not going to, you're going to create an opposition to that racial supremacism when you combine it with a self-obfuscation and an obfuscation of information to your own crowd. Wouldn't it have been great if me and Eric Weinstein, we would have had a debate on any platform he wants on his letter Apron Club right about Joe Rogan guest? That would have been a fun thing, and I would have been extremely respectful in the process. But it probably won't happen at this point, given that he's blocked me. That must be because he considers that going forward, it is not in his interest to face the truths that I lay out on the public space, including, unfortunately, the plagiarism case of his brother. I'll debate anyone, but anyone who agrees with me in the end. Well, it's not a debate, Eric. Shlomo says, Eric is ready to debate anyone who attends a synagogue, that is. All right, if you would like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey. Odyssey chat, Odyssey super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, there's no alternative. All you can do is use the super chats on Odyssey. I have rolled out Entropy. Micronova has sent a super chat, says, Brett doing a limited hangout? A limited hangout or partial hangout, that's Wikipedia. is a tactic used in media relations, perception management, politics, and information management. The tactic originated as a technique in the espionage trade. A limited hangout is spy jargon for a favorite and frequently used gimmick of the clandestine professionals when their veil of secrecy is shredded and they can no longer rely on a phony cover story to misinform the public. They resort to admitting, sometimes even volunteering, some of the truth while still managing to withhold the key and damaging facts in the case. The public, however, is usually so intrigued by the new information that it never thinks to pursue the matter further. Okay, give them something, but don't give them all. Perhaps not in the plagiarism case, because Brett basically is doing less than this. He's not engaging at all with the accusation. But certainly you can see the career that they've made in the last few years, these two, as being a form of limited hangout, form of, hey, we're going to give you what you wanted to hear about trans LGBT activism, but we won't let you dig further. That is pretty much what's happening, and that's why these people often get called gatekeepers. It's simply this. We can see that there's a limit to the truths you will engage in. That's it. I see them asking, why are you calling me gatekeeper? We can see that there is a domain of truth that you're very interested in investigating, talking about, engaging on. And then we can see there are some truths where you act indistinguishably from an SJW. That's why you get called gatekeepers. That's why I don't get called a gatekeeper. You can send 1,000 insults at me, but there's not a single person out there suggesting that I'm a gatekeeper. Because every time you bring a super chat, you bring it even non-paid on the regular chat. If you bring opposition to something I've said or you bring a question, I will face it first. These people have never faced direct questions from the public. It's almost an accident that they have accepted a super chat about the revolutionary phenotype. They probably didn't know what it was about. They saw, there's a super chat, let's read it. And that's the whole story of their engagement with my scientific theory, which, as far as I can tell, they haven't opened that first page. They engaged with the cover at best. And this is all coming from Eric Weinstein, who was saying, we have to have a science that is open to different minds. Because there's going to be some sort of asshole at some point who comes up with a scientific advance. And we should have our ears open. We should not have a system that cognitively select people too much, because ultimately some asshole eventually is going to reach the truth and we won't be able to hear it because we'll have discarded him based on social considerations. Eric, if you want to consider me an asshole, go for it, but read my theory. Like, if someone who has said these things about assholes and scientists, if someone like you cannot disconnect yourself from your political emotions here for you to engage with facts and logic and truth, then there's no hope for civilization and your whole shepherding of white civilization and the rest of the world will fail. Someone sent me this on Twitter, a guy who's coming up with theories. John Drake says, hold it up, sell a few copies. Well, let me tell you, John Drake, the sales of the revolutionary phenotype have not been as good for a whole year. The sales are very, very good since I got my Twitter account back. Because Twitter is special, you know, people are confronted with your controversial takes sometimes. They visit your profile, they say, hey, who's that guy? It sells a lot of copies. So I'm super happy to be back on Twitter, thanks to Elon Musk. Someone has sent me a theory that they appear to have published many years ago. They have a YouTube channel, and this is a blog post of their whole theory. And they call it the unified field theory of thermodynamic spacetime. I don't think it's a completely lost research direction. I don't think it's all bullshit, and I think it's important that we have a unified view, perhaps, of some aspects of energy in the form of heat and its effect potentially on gravity, space-time, that kind of thing. But I think that the blog post is extremely delusional, extremely, it states too much. The guy has a theory that heat isn't heat. It isn't, as we conceive of it, the microscopic movement of little particles that add up statistically to an amount of heat in a medium. He says heat is a distortion of space-time. And he bases this theory on this scientific article from China in 2018, in which they have measured a relationship between gravity and temperature, the relationship being full. It is further deduced that the greater the the higher the temperature of the object, the smaller the absolute value of gravity, and vice versa. So if you heat the object, there is less gravity that it causes. If you cool it, there is more gravity. So based on this, he says heat is a distortion of space-time. And he doesn't come up with a very strict framework. There's no mathematics, no equations that I can see as far as what I've looked at. So he has a really an English statement about this, which is, let us conceive of heat as a space-time distortion. And it's part of it. He says there's part of heat, that's what we think. It's the molecular movements. But there's part of it that's a distortion of space-time. I think we should be open to the idea, but I think it's overstated in the blog, and this whole current science is completely misguided. Calm down, bro. Start by making predictions that differentiate between classical model, because he says, well, we could make predictions, but he doesn't make them specifically. Like, tell me an experience, tell me a model you have, and tell me how the measures of this experiment are validating your model as opposed to some other model. We're not even there. We're just with a guy up to now, based on what I read. Maybe there's other text out there, but based on this particular blog post, I find it a little too aggressive. But I'm open to the idea that when there's heat in an environment, something changes about space-time. I mean, it wouldn't be particularly surprising given that the amount of energy is believed. The reason mass has gravity is that mass is energy. So it is believed that in relativity, that the total amount of energy is is influencing space-time. Not just mass, but the total amount of all energies. And mass happens to be a reserve of a lot of energy. So I'm open to the idea that there's some relationship between gravity and heat. Just be less of an asshole about it and more with precise predictions about what we should expect in an experiment. As far as the Chinese experiment, some physicists have been discarding it. They said it goes against current physics, or maybe they've not done it properly. I don't have a strong position. Maybe cooling something creates more gravity. It's very hard to know without very advanced materials. So these experiments are super hard to reproduce because they demand some very, very precise material, because our experiments about gravity are still made with the classical, how do they call it? It's It's a Cavendish twist scale. So it's a special scale where a certain ball of matter is generating gravity to attract some other ball of matter. The whole thing is connected to a laser, and a change in the angle of the laser, a small change, will result in a deviation of the angle and therefore will point at different points of the plane much further. This requires a lot of techniques, a lot of isolation. So they say that the ball that's cool generates more gravity. I'm willing to believe it. I'm not in a hurry to deny, but I would like to see more of it. I would like to see more confirmations of this. Shlomo sends a super chat. He says, Eric used to complain about something he coined the DISC, the Distributed Information Suppression Complex. Eric and his network have now embraced the phenomenon he used to call out. Exactly. I've been for a long time telling these guys, you are the DISC. You are the DISC, Eric Weinstein. You are acting as a decentralized agent in a system of obfuscation, of discussion that you consider are not in your political or personal interest. You are the DISC, and Eric basically spent many years calling out the DISC. We don't hear him very much about it. It's been a while I haven't seen him talk about the DISC. And that's because Eric Weinstein, ultimately, is the last representative of the DISC. This entire system of intellectual dinosaurs is falling. It's being replaced by people who are emerging on the internet and not caring about this stuff. And they will. People like Just Pearly Things, they will engage openly. They don't care because they kind of land in the podcast space, not through connections within Hollywood, but they emerge really genuinely because they have a talent at it. So when they're in it, they don't feel bound to any non-written rule of show business. They don't even consider themselves part of show business. Hey Dare says, Eric is an anti-node for those outside his coterie. All right, I don't know what this word means, but that's a cute word. It almost sounds French. Fed panics. Signature Bank closed by regulators. Fed, TSY, FDIC announce another banking system bailout. Oh my God, the panic is rolling. T.S. Apostolos says, bank run tomorrow, JF? Yes or no? Bank run. There's going to be pressure on the banking system. Definitely. So, yes, there will be a partial bank run tomorrow. The system will not crash from this. They're already talking about full bailout of SVB Monday morning. That's tomorrow morning. they used to take at least a couple of months, and let's pass through the political process and evaluate all things. But at this point, they're like, Monday morning, they claim that they will fully give access to the money to the depositors of SVB. Now, does that mean that they will have all of their money back, or they will have everything that's there? Because there's a difference there. I don't know which one it is. As we process the shock of yet another small bank failure, which makes JP Morgan even bigger, the Fed just issued a statement saying that to support American businesses and households, the Federal Reserve Board on Sunday announced it will make available additional funding to eligible depository institutions to help assure banks have the ability to meet the needs of all their depositors. This action will bolster the capacity of the banking system to safeguard deposits and ensure the ongoing provision of money and credit to the economy. Look, they are extremely devoted at fixing this problem instantly, like it never happened. So now we have a second bank that fell, Signature Bank, taken over by the FDIC, same thing as SVB. And so, yes, there's going to be kind of a bank run, but not one that will crash the entire system. To the contrary, what it will do is, the political organisms behind all this will create a flow of money that they need to create to fix everything. Now, what does that mean for Bitcoin? It means we could have an explosive rise of Bitcoin in the coming week or two. Because as they tell just how much they need to inject into the system to fix the issue, this is a new arrival of money, no matter what form it takes. It may take the form of, with Barack Obama and George Bush, they had called it loans. But it's like loans that are so generous and that, yeah, they're going to pay back, but you basically gave them an advantage that they shouldn't have, because there's no one who would loan to a failing bank. You are loaning because you have the power of government and the power of money printing, and the free market wouldn't have reacted that way. See, you're just trying to save the system. And they're talking about bailout, instant bailout, Monday morning. So when that happens, the Bitcoin market will react by saying, holy shit, expansion of money supply, these things are too big to fail. So there will continue to be inflation. There will continue to be, the economy will continue being headed toward the zombie status that it's been groomed in by the Fed for decades now. Solar Flare says, some guy with a beard in a kaftan called, I don't even know what you're talking about. So Zero Head says, is there a reason why you cut off the source? A case of plagiarism. So see, Alf took all of this graph and made a macro Alf, so made his little economic commentary. But when you look at the thing that he cut out Zero Hedge as the person, who, as the blog that came with this graph. And this format is particularly Zero Hedge-like. When they do graphs, it comes out in these colors. They probably have preset colors or whatever. So a case of plagiarism again. And this is why we must pursue all cases of plagiarism. We must expose people because it's ripping off. It's ripping off credentials to the people who came up with this information, who made the work. And I thought that in the intellectual domain and in the commentary space, this was a given. I didn't know we had to fight for it. But it's not a given. We've seen it with Brett Weinstein, and now we see it with Zero Hedge. The problem is the leftists, they love to take from the right, take the facts, but they don't like attributing, because to them, to their little circle jerk space of I block JF on Twitter, I don't want to be associated with this or that, they end up not being able to attribute the original thinkers of their own ideas. Because whether they like it or not, and no matter how much they hate us, they ultimately take from us. So credit to Zero Hedge for this graph, and good for them, to have tweeted it, to have the courage of going after their plagiarist and say, hey, I would have appreciated some respect here. Adair says, correct, Steve Saylor has experienced this often, as leftist intellectuals do not want to mention his name. Yeah, these guys who are full-on data, where they have a Twitter account that is very, very specialized, and they come with new stuff. These guys know what they're talking about very often, and they bring original talking points, original facts through their Twitter work. And it gets ripped off so dishonestly. It's time we go after them. It's time we go after the plagiarist. And sorry for the emotions and sorry for the broken egos, but we need to fix this. Because a culture of ripping is a culture where there cannot be a reward to bring intelligent points. So it's a culture that dumbs itself down. We need to elevate, we need to create an intellectual meritocracy, and it's the responsibility of everyone in the public space to trace back, link back, say, doesn't even have to be in the original tweet. You can add it as a reply to the tweet if you have no space. Little reply, and here's the link where I found it. Paladin sends 25... I'm producing saliva. I guess I'm too hungry today. Paladin sends $25. He says, keep up the good work, man. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for everyone who are supporting the show. Disclose.tv was announcing Signature Bank has been closed by U.S. regulators. New York Department of Financial Services has taken possession of Signature Bank in order to protect depositors. Some sex scene involving who is it? Janet? See, that wasn't so bad. Now let's print you that $10 billion. Oh my God. Zelensky having to have sex with Janet Yellen. Yellen, thank you, Ariel Suarez, for giving me her name. And by the way, Ariel Suarez, you asked me yesterday if you could buy a copy of the letter of the inscription I will do on the Bitcoin chain. I've been researching, and in fact, the CEO of Odyssey has been tweeting to me because I was wondering about it. And it seems there are very interesting things we can do. I can do a Bitcoin inscription of my letter to humanity, and then I can create copies of it, and then I could sell these copies. I could sell them relatively cheap, and that way many wallets on the blockchain end up being points of diffusion for the letter. The letter gets copied and it takes over the blockchain. Perhaps that's a good way to fight the revolutionary phenotype, you know? Everyone making a political statement saying, hey, I'm willing to throw money at this ID. Here it is. I have the Bitcoin ordinal that proves it. And it would be a good way to raise money for me. So yesterday, when you asked me, I wasn't sure if I could sell this to you. But it's possible. It's possible that it could be something I do to collect money. Now, tell me, Ariel Suarez, since you are the one who asked about this, how much would you pay in Bitcoin? How much do you think would be a fair price to get just a copy of my Bitcoin ordinal? It's a letter to humanity. I want it to survive on the blockchain. And let's say I number them. And let's say I'm selling you number 7 of that copy. And you know that there's going to be hundreds of it. And perhaps some people will buy the other 100. But how much would you be willing to pay? Because I know that you're a student and you're not a super rich man. What would be a reasonable price? I have no idea. Personally, I'll tell you, for creating each of these inscriptions, my cost and sending it to you, my cost will be about $3 or $4. $3 or $4, that will be my cost. So I'm not in profit if I sell it to you at $5. Do you think that $20 is a reasonable price? $50? I don't know. It's a digital, NFT. It's nothing really. Kay says me zero. And I don't shame you for this. I mean, we're talking about the NFT space is not for everyone. It is a bizarre thing. But Let me tell you this. A lot of the stuff you buy physically will end up completely to waste, whereas most likely the ordinals that you buy will be some of the last thing you still have as you die, and they will be there forever. So there is something fascinating to me as a collector, because I do have this collection instinct. There is something absolutely fascinating about this ordinal system to me. In fact, you will see, I will have to release a video of me with a Wizard hat. So if you see a video of me on Twitter with a Wizard hat, with a magic wand, don't worry, I haven't become crazy. It's that there's a race for an NFT, and they make you do all these quests. And of course, the quests are all about promoting this NFT project. And now I'm at a quest where they say, Jeff, you have to wear a magician costume and act silly on Twitter. I'm going to have to do it because I want the NFT reward. And it's the Odyssey CEO who said, Jeff, prove us that you're a wizard. And he sent me to this website and I got hooked. I really want the NFT. I want this little magician wizard NFT on my Bitcoin account. I'm going to have to go to the dollar store tomorrow and buy a magician Atreal, and you know, whatever I can find. Maybe if I find a little cover, I can make my cape. Maybe if I can find a hat at the dollar store, a little wand, maybe I can do a wand with maybe pieces of wood. I'll see what I can do. But I'm going to have to do it because it's the quest you have to do to have a chance at getting your NFT. Ariel Suarez sends $25. He says, personally, I'm a laissez-faire free market guy. It would depend a lot on both how much you are willing to sell them for and how much people are willing to pay. Yes, but that's it. That's why I'm interviewing you, because since you are kind of a model client, a model customer, since you've expressed desire even before it was my idea, you know, even before I knew that I could do this. And so, I mean, I think it would be beautiful, a future in which people realize, holy shit, there are 500,000 copies of of this letter in the Bitcoin blockchain. You know, I'd love the electricity guys who do this Bitcoin mining to start asking, who the fuck is this guy? I think it would be a nice way to spread the letter. It would spread in a virtual space, of course. But it could become a big thing. Ariel Suarez says $20 is very reasonable in my view. Yeah, and the way I see it is at $20, that gives a place for a lot of people to get in. And people who have Bitcoin, normally they don't have $20 of Bitcoin. They have thousands of dollars. So they would certainly, there's certainly a bunch of people who would be ready to pay more than this. And perhaps for these people, I can reserve some numbers like number 1, 2, 3 and sell them at a higher price. Ariel is telling me he is no longer a student. I finished my bachelor last semester. Very nice. So are you a programmer now? That's great. Great to hear, because when you finish school, the feeling of release is amazing. The feeling of release is amazing. Shlomo says, $20. Why do you need $15, Jeff? I can't believe you're asking for my last $10. Okay, here's $5. It's very hard for me to sell them below 20, because on top of the expense that I have to make to just produce the inscription, that really gets out of my wallet. On top of it, it will be a lot of time, you know, copy-pasting the ordinal, making sure that everything looks good. It's going to be some time to handle. A new guy says, I'm old. What does this $20 actually buy? You're going to have to go watch the shows of a couple of days ago, including yesterday, about Bitcoin ordinals. So it buys a trace in the blockchain that you own on your Bitcoin wallet. And you can trade it, you can send it, you can show it. It's really a text that will be my letter to humanity to warn them of the dangers of the phenotypic revolution, because clearly, if I get blocked by intellectuals today, we have to start talking about the intellectuals of the future who may be more open and more intelligent. So it will be my letter to humanity. I will have a first copy of it on my Bitcoin wallet. But then you could have a copy of it that is number one, number two, number three, number five, and you could carry it in your wallet, send it to your friends, you could do whatever you want. But it gives you a time-stamped, minted proof that I gave you a certified copy of the letter that you carry going forward. That is what an NFT is, basically. But on top of it, the NFTs I hear in the ETH blockchain are very often they are sending a pointer outside of the chain. But what I really like about the Bitcoin ordinals is that the data of your text is really in the blockchain. You don't have to point it to a web resource that eventually, if I die, I can't make sure that the website is still up. It's really in the blockchain that the text will be embedded. New guy says, so a meme on the blockchain? Yes, that's what an NFT is. Okay, Ariel is working on some specialized certifications. Oh man, certifications. That is such a pain in the ass. So to explain the financial collapse that is happening right now, some guy asked Bing's AI to explain it in terms of monkey banana. So here's the explanation of what's happening with banks.
Somebody on Twitter just asked Bing's AI to explain the Silicon Valley bank collapse in monkey banana terms, and I'm going to read that response to you. Here's the response. Here I go. Me try to explain. Silicon Valley bank like big tree with many bananas. Many monkeys like bananas and put their bananas in tree. Tree promised to give more bananas to monkeys later, but tree bad. Tree lose many bananas in storm. Tree not have enough bananas for all monkeys. Monkeys get scared and want their bananas back. Many monkeys run to tree and grab their bananas, but some monkeys too late. No more bananas in tree. Monkey sad and angry. Big monkey come and take tree over. Big monkey say he will find more bananas for monkeys who lost their bananas. Big monkey gives some bananas to some monkeys now and more later, but some monkeys have to wait long time for their bananas. Other trees see what happened to big tree and get worried. Other trees have many bananas too, but not lose them in storm.
Oh my God, that is so funny. Stephen Robinson has sent me this rendering of the financial crisis. Beautiful, beautiful video, Stephen Robinson. Thank you for sending me that. Bill Gates declares cows as enemy number one, says artificial meat is healthier than real meat.
Another thing is that cows and other grass-eating species have a digestion system that emits methane. And methane is a very powerful greenhouse gas. And so cows alone account for about 6% of global emissions. And so we need to change
cows,
just cows alone.
How are we going to do that?
Well, actually, of all the categories, the one that has gone better than I would have expected 5 years ago is this work to make what's called artificial meat. And so you have people like Impossible or Beyond Meat, both of which I invested in.
You eat it as well, or do you like it?
Absolutely.
You do.
You can go to Burger King and buy the Impossible Burger.
All right. Is it healthier for you, or just healthier for the atmosphere?
It's slightly healthier for you in terms of less cholesterol.
All right. So they will continue going after farmers. Unfortunately, that is the plan. And they will favor their industry. And Bill Gates himself has invested in all these things. He's cornered the market. All he needs really is to make meat illegal, and all of his investment will go good. Doubting Thomas says, JF, as a Frenchman, do you suggest any particular brand of cognac? I quite like Grand Marnier, but I'm sure there are other good ones. Grand Marnier, I don't think of it as a cognac. Is it a cognac? Because it's flavored with orange and everything. Maybe it's a base of cognac flavored with this. But I don't think of Grand Marnier as a pure cognac, of course. It's Grand Marnier is a mix. It's a mix of flavor added, strong liquor. So I don't have a favorite brand. I don't respect a cognac. Cognac was the name of my grandfather's dog. I still remember. It was a Pomeranian, a little Pomeranian with puffy hair. And Cognac was the name of the dog. I love that dog. We were going to my grandfather every Sunday, and I love that dog. That's what gave me the desire to have a dog eventually. Yeah, it's an orange liqueur, Grand Marnier. Now, as far as when I have to buy cognac, I don't even want cognac because cognac is always pricier than brandy. So very often, Mama JF is telling me, JF, I need one spoon of cognac. And it's like, I'm going to have to pay $75 for a bottle of cognac. So that Mama JF can have one spoon so that she can make her cake. And so what I say in these situations is, Mama JF, brandy. Brandy is a perfect replacement for cognac. So no, I don't think that... I think that at this level of alcohol, you know, the subtleties of the taste are not so important. They're not worth the price generally. Now, I understand that if you... I've tasted a very high-quality Irish whiskey or something like this. I think it was a whiskey. And of course, there is something special about it. Of course, you can taste the difference. And a scotch, you know, with very... You can taste in a scotch, I believe it's grass that they put in. Like, you can taste a strong flavor of something earthy or something. That's interesting, but it's almost never worth the money. Because if you drink this kind of high level of alcohol liquor, you do it to be drunk. And the fact is, it's not enjoyable. It is a very high level of alcohol, and it's generally not super interesting on the tongue. So my policy is always the cheapest bottle when it goes to this. So I'm sorry to disappoint you. I'm sorry to disappoint you if you thought that you would have a Frenchman's position on this. I really don't care about cognac. It's always overpriced. Rugpull, banned the BBC, says, Rugpull, SVB Financial, deactivates Twitter. I don't like it when under the storm, these people disappear. I don't like it. It seems to me that if you have one responsibility, when you fucked up, it's to be out there and to be open about it and to face the music, you know? I would never delete my Twitter account in an act of cowardice in a moment where I'm getting called out about something. To me, it would be my responsibility to weather through the storm, explain my side of things. Maybe people would be attacking me for unjustified reasons, I would explain. Or maybe they would have something that they're right about, and in which case I would assume it also. But I would wait always to have weathered the storm, because it shows that your entire engagement with the internet is not honest. A little bit like Sam Harris. See, Sam Harris was on Twitter when it was winning for him to be on Twitter, when Twitter was heavily censoring his political opposition. He was there. But Sam Harris disappears the second there is fairness reemerging on Twitter again. and acts like Eric Weinstein blocking me looks like this too. It's a bunch of people who they only engage when they beat you. And they don't care if they beat you dishonestly. They only engage when they beat you and when the system is favorable to them. And then when the system isn't, they disappear. That is really too bad. Paladin as this one I had read. Did I miss a super chat? Paladin, Ariel Suarez, thank you so much. No, I read them all. Never seen in over 40 years the SVB collapse sparks bank runs as people wait in line. Yeah, we've seen pictures that are certainly worrying of people forming lines. Bank run in the US. I'm not the kind of guy to participate to a bank run. To me, it's such a mob phenomena. Like, if I would see the queue, I'd be like, all right, I'm doing the exact opposite of whatever everyone is doing. That's always how I react. But there's a lot of normies out there who are not prepared. I mean, to give them credit, I live a very virtual life. Having money in my wallet is not something that is common to me. I live really... I think that the only person I pay in cash is my meat provider, my neighbor who has cows. I buy his meat in cash because that's easier. But other than this, I never rely on cash. You know, I'm not one of these guys who think that cash going into cards and debit cards is a huge problem. There may be problem. There may be bad intentions in the progression toward it, and especially in the removal of the option of cash. But personally, as an individual, I don't suffer any problem with digitalized cash. This should scare the hell out of bankers and regulators worldwide. I got a text from another friend. He was definitely moving his money to JP Morgan. It was happening. The social contract that we might have collectively had was too fragile. I called our CEO and we wired 97% of our deposits to HSBC by midday on Thursday. And as explained below, the new normal bank run is instant, huge, and devastating. All of these massive movements of just people being nervous, it's extremely worrying, you know, because we are at an age of instantaneity. A bank run back in the days would still take many days. You know? But now a bank run is like a handful of companies can just crash a bank just by doing electronic transfers all instantly. I don't like this. That's why I like Bitcoin, you know. Cosmic Knot says banks will be monopolized. Yeah, that's another problem. We see market players like JP Morgan becoming big in the process, as Zero Hedge was commenting earlier. Cheer says, I like mid-banks, I cannot lie. As I put pen to paper, I can't help but wonder if this is the hill I want to die on. The prudent thing is to run away and wait for clarity. That is especially true when there is such misinformation and even FUD. However, I keep thinking of the phrase, the Lord hates a coward, so let's dive right in. He's talking about the big banks, and I think it's not a bad strategy he's talking about. Perhaps there is something wrong about, because SVB, it was the textbook example of an elite bank. You know, they basically didn't have the everyday client who has employment and who receives a check every week. They really had clients that were depositing in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And perhaps there is a weakness in that, because the mid-banks, they probably stay closer to the reality. They're not into... And SVB, one of its characteristics that was exposed on social media today, is that they had the largest proportion of investment. That was the graph that Zero Hedge was plagiarized about. They had a very large section of investment assets that weren't perfectly liquid. They were basically investing a lot of the money in stocks. And so when stocks drop and you're like, oh, I don't want to sell. Well, I don't want to sell until the point where you will have to sell or the government will come to sell for you. That is what's happening. They weren't keeping enough liquid reserves. But of course, we knew that this would be the case. And CZ of Binance is talking publicly about this temptation. He would like to buy some of these banks. He says, is it time yet? Not sure. On his Twitter account, he refers to a previous Yahoo post that had said Binance considers buying banks, bridging gap between crypto and TradFi. So it was an old article, but CZ is posting a new tweet about it and saying, is it time yet? Not sure. The thing is, it's never time with banks, because in a natural system, the banks would crash further, and you would buy them at mega rebate. It would be the deal of the century. But this never happens in America, because we have a tradition of bailouts. So you're never going to get a bank cheap because banks are a government-protected cartel that can only win. So you're always going to pay a lot for bank infrastructure in America. And so my counsel to CZ would be, don't do it. Although if he was to do it, he may solve one of the huge problems of crypto, which is the ramp in, the ramp out. It's rarely trustable. And there are things like Coinbase that are getting good for US customers, but internationally, we are still left with a patched network of options like Binance P2P, where basically the crypto world and the bank world are, you can feel that they're isolated. There's no direct conversion happening. So it's like, okay, I'm going to put that crypto in an escrow. And while Binance hold that crypto in an escrow, you're going to make me your bank payment, and then the escrow will be released. So that shows that there is something wrong. There is a place for improvement of just the facility, the ease with which we transfer between crypto and USD. So perhaps that's what CZ has in mind. But in my view, he would overpay anything that he tries to buy in there. There's nothing for him in this. And ultimately, the business of banks is a scam. It is a scam of fractional reserve, which is precisely what the crypto world is here to solve. So I think CZ should stay clean on the crypto side. Based Gringo says, I'm hearing reports that SVB is getting a $25 billion bailout. $25 billion. Yeah, it's possible. They say it might happen as early as tomorrow, 8 a.m. Like, so I'm sure that they will save everything. There will not be a dollar missing, and they will print anything they need to print for this to happen. It's as bad as we thought. CCP money flowed to Biden family, according to bank records, documents obtained by House GOP. Republicans on the House Oversight Committee have been working with four witnesses with close ties to the Bidens, who have provided documents and other evidence tying the Bidens to the Chinese Communist Party. It's as bad as we thought. Since we've last spoken, we have bank records in hand. We have individuals who are working with our committee. Yeah, so that's a whole story. It's the 10% for the big guy. But they're now tracing that 10%, and it did get very close to the big guy. Well, of course, like, it's not like these corrupt Chinese politicians and spies are gonna say these things and not give 10% to the big guy. They're gonna find a way. Absolutely. And the son of Biden was totally there to operate this illegal transfer. The soy father is right on this one. We had a debate between Carl Benjamin, Sargon of Akkad, and Millennial Woes. And it started with Sargon of Akkad saying, "The salt that emerges when someone correctly points out that the Nazis were a socialist party, followed a form of socialism, and engaged in political violence as socialist is just delicious." And Millennial Woes, I disagree with him on this one. It's a moronic simplification to say that the Nazis were left-wing. However you feel about them, to say they were socialist is just a low IQ take. I don't think it's true, Millennial Woes. I think that it is proper to say that the Nazis, most of their goal, most of their achievements, most of what they were doing, was done with the force of the state. And it was done with a heavily interventionist state. Now, interventionist state always partner with private entity, corporate entities. And that's what you see in the US, for example, the whole social welfare, even family courts, and how they, you know, family courts, when they force fathers to go into this kind of re-education process and see their children in some cage before they can be released to their real home, they pass through a private entity. So sometimes a private corporation is ultimately doing the bidding of a heavily interventionist state. And that's what the Nazis were doing. They may have involved the industry in many of their things, but it was basically state-controlled industry. It was state-commanded, state-ordered industry. And yes, Silver Spider points out to the obvious, Nazis means national socialist, of course. But that's an easy one, you know. If you want to reach the depth of the debate, you have to go to, well, they were not only socialist by name, they were truly socialist. They were doing everything that socialists do. They take the state, they gain control and command over the private sector, and they bind it to their political desire, political project. So Carl Benjamin was responding, "It's a moronic simplification to say that the Nazis were not socialist. Feel however you like about them, but they were socialist by doctrine and action." Absolutely agree. That's why the Nazi regime would have been unsustainable if it had been allowed to continue on its own. If there weren't that... that Jewish pushback through the various military interventions of Western civilization and the exodus of Jews to America as part of the whole thing. If the Nazis were let to crash themselves, they would have crashed themselves because there is no central authority that can ever direct society toward a good direction. They will always be corrupt. They will always end up abusing their power. And if they don't, they will be replaced by someone who abuses their power. Lendald Guntram says, "It is an easy one, but they took the name for a reason and they stayed true to those principles. In other words, it was not just for show." Exactly. Only in the modern mentality of Hitler has to be far right, do they find justifications for this interpretation of history. It's absolutely ahistorical to think of the Nazi party as right-wing. Friend of Gandalf sends $10. Thank you so much. He says, "Can't watch the show tonight, just showing some love." Well, thank you so much to you, sir. Giving the middle finger is a God-given right. Canadian judge rules. Yeah! I'm allowed by the courts of Canada to say, fuck you. Oh my God, I feel like a rock and roll boomer. Giving the middle finger is a God-given right. Canadian judge rules. Gesture may not be civil or polite, but it is not a crime. I was surprised by this decision because the courts are getting cocked more cocked and more cocked as we progress through their decisions. But here you had a little conflict between neighbors, and some neighbor says, fuck you to the other, go fuck yourself or whatever. And the other starts making all these false allegations. He says to the police, he threatened my life. He keeps harassing me. So he calls the police on all these false allegations. And ultimately, the judge decides, I don't believe you on all this. I just believe you that he said, fuck you. And he said, the fuck you is totally constitutionally protected. It's a belief protected by the Constitution, which protects diversity and just the diversity of thought and cognition. I was like, holy shit, it's been a while since I haven't seen a good decision from a judge. I think that this was in Montreal. I think that the courts must be aware that the more they let the left believe, like, you can use us to go after your enemies, the more they're going to get this petty crap from everyone. So the courts would be much wiser to just distrust any allegation, always implement justice, fairness, and liberty. And people would learn about this. People would never go back to annoy you because they would know, all right, I don't have a case. The reason people are attracted to things like family court is they know they can totally destroy the man. John Drake says, why is the court even entertaining this crap? Well, you know, the court has to entertain any crap that's given to them, but how long they entertain it and how swift they are at saying you don't have a case, that is up to them. And in this case, the swiftness is appreciated. Last news item before we close the show. Pope Francis bashes gender ideology, calls it dangerous. Pope Francis told journalist Elisabetta Peak of the Argentine newspaper La Nación, gender ideology today is one of the most dangerous ideological colonization. Why is it dangerous? Because it dilutes differences and the richness of men and women and of all humanity is the tension of differences. Well, that's great. A little late for the Catholic Church, but perhaps Nick Fuentes is starting to have his impact on the Catholic Church. They're becoming based. That's beautiful. But, you know, it's a very tame statement. We've been on, the family has been under attack for like 30 years. It's time you wake up. Pope. Wake up, Pope Francis. Rutin Tutin says, family court exists for one reason only, to meet the desires of adult women, not for families, not for kids, not even for the best interest of the woman. Exactly. Because, you know, these women who are going rude after their exes out of vindictiveness, they end up with a lot on their hands. And it's like, all right, you want to fight? You want to fight by lying, by committing a crime of perjury just for the purpose of stealing my children, and you're going to end up as a single mother alone and sad? Okay, I guess that's a project. Bye-bye, everyone. I'll see you all tomorrow.